Hare Krishna, everyone. So nice to be with you. Everyone good? Get good sleep. No one was snoring in your room or anything like that. They always put me at home and snoring usually, but this time I had my own room.
You sleep all right? No creaks around in the roof. Okay, Jay, thank you so much for the kirtan. So, hi all, everyone. So we can start officially. Obviously, Nitapa was just stepped out, but. While he's busy taking a call, I just thought to introduce the session. So, as I mentioned before, the first session for us is on the importance of sadhana. So, as Krishna conscious practitioners, sadhana is an important part of our day-to-day lives, whether it be japa, kirtan, reading, whatever. So, this session will allow us to kind of, you know, give us a chance to ask the relevant questions if you have any, of course. Like I said, it's a Q&A format. And yeah, ask the relevant questions about our own practice. So it could be something we could, you know, we're probably struggling with, or something we could improve on or focus more on. You know, so today it'll be a Q&A format where Nitai will be asking Sutta Prabhu, our guest speaker, the questions. So the questions, if you want to ask anonymously, so if you're too shy, you don't want to put your hand up, I hope you're not too shy. You can always message. You guys are on the WhatsApp group? Everyone here on the WhatsApp group? Yeah?
Yeah.
You two on.
Okay, so everybody on their behalf, if they have a question, you can post it on the WhatsApp group? Perfect. Okay, so if you're on the WhatsApp group, that's fine. You can post your anonymous questions there, and we can have them read out to Sutta Prabhu as well. Or if you're feeling brave, you can just put your hand up as well. Yeah, so just to introduce Sutta Prabhu, of course he doesn't need no introduction, but he is the head monk at Bhaktivedanta Manor, so it's the UK's spiritual headquarters, and is an inspiring author and exemplary leader of many initiatives such as School of Bhakti and Tattva.com as well. So if we want to get the session started, Nitai Prabhu, would you like to come forward? Yeah?
Yeah, Nitai, you can come. I can maybe say a couple of things. Yeah, please, sure. Come. And then the size of the ask questions. I'm actually nice to help answer that. Sadhana is an amazing topic. I kind of, just to give you a little bit of background, I was coming to the temple, as in the manor, from a really young age. When I was about 15, I was like, my best friend was a Muslim. He was like from the Muslim faith, and like he knew everything about his religion, and I was like, I don't know anything about what I'm doing. I went to the temple, like I didn't even know like what the Bible teaches. So then I felt like I should start reading about it. So when I was 15, I first read the Bible. How many of you are under 15? How old are you guys?
12.
I thought you were saying you were 12.
Are you sure?
So when I was 15, I started reading the Gita, and I started chanting at that time. And the devotees told me to chant one round a day. You know how long I chanted one round for? Like without increasing, like probably about 3 years. It's like the slowest progress ever. It's just chanting one round for 3 years, and I didn't increase. But one thing I did do, which was good in that time, is I did one round every day, even though I didn't increase. And what then happened is when I was about 18 and I started university, then I went from like 1 to like 16, like in one go. So the reason I'm telling you that is like we all grow in our Krishna consciousness, in our spiritual life in different ways. And you can see even like with height, you know, like when you're, like believe it or not, I was really short. but so much of my life I was like sure, I was like everyone's taller than me, you know. And then between like 16 and 18 I just went like that, like literally, and I was like taller than everyone, you know. Whereas some people are like really tall by the time they're 10 or something, and then they don't grow much more after that. So like we all grow in different ways, and we all grow in our spiritual life in different ways. And like all of you are individual, so you don't need to try to live someone else's life. Like everyone has their own life, everyone progresses in their own way. Everyone's good at certain things and not so good at other things. And sometimes we look at everyone else's good stuff and our bad stuff, and we think like, oh my God, everyone's so like amazing, and I'm just like average. But everyone, Krishna says in the Gita, every soul is amazing. And believe it or not, everyone has amazing abilities, talents, and things that Krishna has given you. And instead of looking at someone else, you need to find what you're good at and what Krishna's given you, and then use that for Krishna. So I guess that was just a kind of little opening about sadhana, that just try to be steady in it, whatever you do. Number two, realize that we all progress in spiritual life in different ways, and we all have different strengths and abilities, and we shouldn't get too much into comparison. Put your hand up if you find yourself comparing yourself with others. You do that all the time, isn't it? Especially like social media, see what other things people are doing. And, does it feel good when you compare with others? You end up feeling inspired after you compare with others. Depends who you compare with.
Depends who you compare yourself to.
It is against yourself. You feel inspired.
Yeah, and that's another point also. Like we should, to measure how advanced we are in spiritual life, we shouldn't compare against someone else. We should compare with ourselves and say, like, where was I 1 year ago? Where was I 2 years ago? And where am I now? Yeah. And when you compare to yourself, then you can actually. I'm going to be talking about that in the next session. But yeah, all right. So that was a little introduction, and I guess Nitai, you have some questions.
Yeah.
And then we're going to open it out to you guys as well. And if you don't like Nitai's question, don't answer that one. I don't know. No, I'm sure they're very good. Nitai, by the way, he's like my guru. When I was coming to Krishna consciousness, Nitai was like, yeah, he was taller than me as well. I think, no, you were. He's like, so it's kind of funny, he's asking me questions, but anyway.
So just going from that, I used to be taller than him, now look where he is. So Yun, thank you so much for giving us your Sangha and association.
Thank you, Krishna.
So what many of us have grown up in Krishna consciousness. For example, I became a devotee when I was like 16, and I saw my parents practicing Krishna consciousness, and I specifically saw them a child. Mm-hmm. So when I saw the change in them when they start chanting 16 rounds, that's when I thought, there must be something in this. But I know it worked for them, but I don't know if it works for me. So then I started chanting, and the rest is history. But the thing is, like I said, many of us have grown up in Krishna consciousness. Some of you are born into Krishna conscious families. You just kind of see it. Somebody's chanting, somebody's, I don't know, reading, whatever. So the first question is, what actually is sadhana? Because we just see it, what's its purpose. We just everyone's trying. Okay, we should try. Everyone's reading. Okay, we should read. We just kind of follow. Why are we actually doing it? What is it? So maybe we could just really start, go to the foundation and start with that.
Yeah, that's a good question. So sadhana is a Sanskrit word. Does anyone know what ghana means? Dhana. Let me give you another. Yeah, go on. Wealth. Excellent, very good. Sanskrit scholar. Yeah, dhana means wealth, right? Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in one prayer, he says, Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim. I don't want wealth. I don't want followers. I don't want, the opposite gender. I just want to serve you, Krishna. So dhana means wealth. So, and what does sat mean? Sat.
Eternal.
Yeah, right. Like we say, the soul is sat, chit, ananda, is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. So, sat, what is sadhana then?
Eternal wealth.
Oh my God, you don't need the advice for that. Yes, it means your eternal wealth. And why does it mean your eternal wealth? Because what sadhana is sadhana is that practice which if you do it, or that activity that if you do it, it will bring you eternal wealth. And so then my next question, and you do get a prize for this, this is very right, is what is your eternal wealth? Alright, Brandon.
Your eternal wealth is like happiness and bliss and being happy and going up to the spiritual world, I guess.
Amazing. Okay, so your eternal wealth is happiness, but I want to ask you something else. Where does happiness come from? Yeah.
Within.
Within? Okay. Literally within. Okay, very good. And what is it within you that brings that happiness?
Krishna.
Krishna. And what do you need in your relationship with Krishna to bring the happiness from within? I'm trying to take you guys there.
Loving service.
Loving service, yes, love. Love is actually our eternal wealth, because when you have love for Krishna, and you have that within your heart, then it brings out the happiness that we're all looking for. So your sadhana, your eternal wealth is love. So when you chant about Krishna, when you read about Krishna, when you discuss about Krishna, when you serve Krishna, this is all considered to be sadhana. Because what these practices do is they awaken your love for Krishna. You already love Krishna. Like, it's not something you need to learn. But we've forgotten. So when you do sadhana, then it helps you to remember, oh, Krishna is the one I love, and Krishna is the one I have a relationship with, and that love awakens. And when you love Krishna, you love everyone, right? Because everyone is connected to Krishna. Right? Just like when you water the roots, then the whole tree becomes satisfied. So that's basically what it is. When you chant, when you read, when you do all these things, it's not just your religion, it's because you want to awaken love. That brings happiness. Yeah.
Okay. So you mentioned a few things there about sadhana. So can you explain what is the difference between sadhana and service, and specifically, what are the activities considered to be in the sadhana category, and what considered to be in the service category? Because is going out and water distribution sadhana, for example? Sadhana the same as service?
Yeah. That's a very good question. In one sense, in a higher sense actually, everything becomes one. Oh my God, that sounds like the wrong philosophy. I'll explain. In the beginning, there's sadhana, which is very much about your own heart, your own internal relationship with Krishna, your own consciousness within that you're trying to develop. And so the activities of sadhana are like very much about personal, spiritual connection with Krishna, and that's like chanting, japa, that's like reading the books, that's like worshipping the deities and praying to the deities. This is all considered sadhana. And then there is seva, where we like extend ourselves to please others, to please Krishna, to please the devotees, to serve people around us, to serve those who are not necessarily devotees of Krishna. So, you know, serving prasadam, or, you know, going out on Harinam, or, you know, organizing a retreat, or managing a temple. Don't do that one. These are all considered service because they're more about what you're giving. So in the beginning, there's a sense of we have to give, which is service, and we also have to receive, which is sadhana. Just like when you're breathing, what do? You breathe out, and then you
breathe in.
Breathe in, yeah. And if you just keep breathing out, well, you're not going to have a very long back. Right? You have to breathe out, you have to breathe in. It's the rhythm of life. So service is like that, giving, and then we receive. Giving, and then we receive. Like giving Krishna and feeling Krishna. But you know what happens when you become more advanced is that your sadhana actually becomes a service. And your service actually becomes a sadhana. This is kind of like, okay, this is high level Krishna consciousness, but I'll say it anyway. Like for example, someone like Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. You see the pictures here of the Parampara, and then Prabhupada's on the left, and then to his right is Bhaktisiddhanta, and then to his right, you can see that person crouched over, that's Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. You know that picture? Shall I tell you something amazing about that picture? That's the only picture that was ever taken of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, because he never wanted any fame. So it was like, you'd never catch Gaur Kishore Das Babaji doing a selfie. He was like, no one's allowed to take a picture of me. But you know what happened? He passed away, and his, you know, everyone knew he was a saint. They were like, there's no pictures of him. So you know what they did? This picture is actually taken when he's already left his body. He's actually, and actually what, if you look in that, you can't see it, but actually someone's holding him up. And there's someone in front, and they've painted a picture. Obviously they haven't painted the guy at the back holding him up. He's been edited out, but he's actually being held up by someone because there were no pictures ever taken of him. And so he was someone who just chanted all day. And he didn't engage at all with the world, he was just with Krishna. So someone may say he wasn't doing any service, he was just doing sadhana. But you know what it said? That the power of his chanting of Hare Krishna was holding off the effects of Kali Yuga, just by his chanting. So can you imagine, someone is just in a room somewhere and they're just chanting, and they're chanting with such love that they're attracting Krishna's mercy, and Krishna's mercy is then making the world a better place. But maybe our chanting will affect them. We have to go out and do something. But so in a higher sense, then your sadhana like becomes a service. And when you're doing service in a higher sense, you know, like Srila Prabhupada was traveling the world and teaching people about Krishna. But like when he was teaching, like when he was writing his books, which was a service to the world, that was also a great, his personal time with Krishna. So later on, everything works together. So anyway, did that answer your question?
Yeah, that was deep. So if we could categorize it directly.
Yeah.
Just in simple.
Yeah, just to make it simple. Sadhana is like japa, reading the books, prayers. Later on today, I'll talk about, for example, journaling. Am I missing anything up? You can tell me. Yeah, I think
those. Deity.
Yeah, deity worship and prayers. Yeah, this is considered sadhana. And then service is like service to. You know, in your temple, practical stuff that you do, service to share Krishna consciousness with others, like that.
Okay. So one of the biggest challenges, especially in the youth, is obviously as somebody who's young, I'm talking from past experience.
All those years ago.
I'm their spokesperson. Just 5 years ago. So naturally, because we have so much energy, enthusiasm, sadhana is very difficult. To get to sit down and read something that's only what you do at school, you know, and I hate school or college or whatever, and to sit down and quietly in one place and just say the same thing over and over, how do I do that?
Yeah.
Whereas service is more like, yeah, get the mridanga, you know.
Yeah.
I'm using my energy much more. So how do what's the importance of sadhana and the as opposed to service?
That's a good question.
Like in other words, why do I need sadhana? I remember when I went to 25 kirtan one time, and I was like, we're doing kirtan anyway, why do I need to chant my 16 hands? In other words, why do I need to do sadhana? I'm totally absorbed in service.
Yeah.
So can you explain what's
the sadhana is very, it's like personal, it's less energetic. How do you put your hands up if you like to sleep? That's not so energetic, right? And really engaging with others. There's a sense in which, you know, like sleep comes very naturally to us because we're like, I need to recharge my body, you know? Like, you know, it's, we know that, you know, actually the advanced devotees, they even don't like to sleep because they feel like they're wasting time. But there's a sense in which when we sleep, we're kind of okay with that. We realize it's good. I recharge myself. And so sadhana, although it's like silent, it's quiet, it's alone, you know what? Sometimes isn't it nice to be in the silence? Isn't it nice to sometimes be alone? Isn't it sometimes like, it's nice to be here with everyone, but isn't it sometimes nice to like walk into the forest by yourself and just hear your own heart, hear your own mind? And some of us, we may be more social than others. Like, I was pretty like an antisocial person. I was like, I was like a quiet person, you know, just like at the back, I'd be happy to be like away from like the crowds. So for me, it kind of came naturally. But I think everyone has a little bit of that within yourself, that sometimes you just feel like, I just want to disconnect from the world. I just want to like... And what I would say is that sadhana is like the best time. You can grow to actually really like that. Like being alone, like being in the quiet, like being in like away from energy. It's a really beautiful thing. But in order to do that, you have to practice. So in the beginning, like if I tell you, all right, everyone, disappear into the forest for a whole day and chant Hare Krishna, you'll like it. You know, like after like half an hour out there, you'd be like, nah, and disappear something with the bodies, you know. Because we don't have that, we're not able to do that. But every day, if you do a little bit, then you'll actually grow to actually really like that. And then what will happen is that in your day, you'll feel like if I don't spend that time away from everything, it's not like, it's not a complete day. So I think sadhana and that low, so-called low energy stuff, it's actually, we all actually have an attraction for it, but it takes time.
So the key thing is just to start...
Practice it, yeah, a little bit, yeah, yeah. Just start doing a bit by bit. How many of you, like when you do sadhana sometimes, does it feel good to just be away from everyone and everything? And just like be with your beads, be with Krishna. Like, it's nice, isn't it, sometimes to like, yeah, get away from all these people. Yeah,
I think it's nice because you were just talking about people, about how sadhana is about receiving. So when you have that, when you have your own space, it kind of like recharges you, right? And then you can kind of like go out there in the world, so, as they call it, and take on the world. Because you feel like, okay, now I've done what I needed to do with myself, I can now go out there and do what I need to do in that sense. Yeah. And then be able to do service, you know, and give what you've actually just received. So.
Yeah. Definitely. Like when I was, when I graduated from university, then I was like, I'm going to get a job. I don't know that. So I went to India for 6 months, and I was traveling to different places. And then I remember I was traveling in one place. I can't even remember it, where it was now. Anyway, then I was walking, and there was like this yogi, like he was by himself, like, you know, matted locks, like the work, like he was like the real McCoy, yeah, like it was a real thing. It was just in this like cave, like it wasn't a cave. It was like a mountainside, but it was like an enclave, and he was just sitting in there. It was like, you know, it was like one of these pictures of like a yogi, you know. So I thought, should I go up to him? Should I go up to him? Then I thought, yeah, you know what, I'm gonna go up to him. So I don't know Hindi, so I tried to speak to him in Gujarati, and it was like, and then I started speaking in English, and he was like, yeah, yeah, okay, let's speak in English. So then I was asking him different things, and then you know what I said to him? I said, can you give me one tip? Can you give me one tip for my spirituality? And you know what he said to me? He said, every year, disconnect for 1 month. Every week, disconnect for 1 day. Every day, disconnect for 1 hour. And then he looked at me and he goes, disconnect to connect. I was like, wow, that should be on TEDx. It was interesting. Then he started explaining to me how sometimes you have to disconnect from the world. You know, like sometimes if you have like a device or something and it's not working, you can sometimes all you have to do is just unplug it and then replug it, isn't it? Or like your phone's gone, like you just turn it off and then you just turn it on again. So our life is sometimes like that. You just need to disconnect it sometimes and then you can. So yeah.
Okay. Anybody else have a question at this point? Okay. I've had some Pandasenas come up to me and say how they find it difficult to read. What do you do?
As in they don't know how to read? Or? As in just to have the concentration. Yeah, like, so there's different things you can do. Like again, just discipline yourself for like even 5 minutes or 10 minutes a day, and then you'll find that your capacity to read actually grows. Some people, you know, they've built that capacity incredible. I spoke to one devotee at the manor and asked him like some years ago, I was like, what did you do on the weekend? He's like an investment banker. And he was like, I woke up in the morning and I started reading the Bhagavatam. And I said, and then what did you do? And he said, I just carried on reading. And I said, and then what did you do? He said, I just read some more. I was like, how many hours did you read? He said he read 12 hours in a row, the Bhagavatam, just straight through. I was like, wow, what did your wife say? But in the beginning, we may not have that. So again, if you spend some time, 5-10 minutes, but you do it every day, then you'll build up the capacity. But there are other things you can do, like you can read audio books. You can listen to audio books. So sometimes if reading is difficult, you can get all of Prabhupada's books. That if you've got phones, on your phone, there's an app called BVML. And the best thing about it is that it's free. That's not the best thing. But BVML. And it's got all of Prabhupada's books as an audio. So you can even just listen to it. Right? So if you find reading difficult, you can listen to audio books. Another thing is, just call each other. And just say like, 10 minutes a day, we'll read it together on the phone or on WhatsApp video or on Zoom or whatever it may be. And just read together with someone else. And then you just, at the end of 10 minutes, you say, like, what did you learn from that? What did you learn from that? Do you have any questions? And it's amazing. You learn so much. The third thing is that you can do courses if you don't like reading. Because when you do a course, like you have CVS here and other stuff, you can even run your own course and you can get someone to teach you, and when someone teaches you, it's easier, so you can do that as well. So there are different things you can do to make it easier. But,
and what would you say is the balance between reading and chanting? Some people actually love to read, so they just spend all their time reading but then don't do any chanting, and then there's some people who don't like reading and maybe they'll do chanting. So what do you say is the balance?
Well, both. You have to do a little bit at least in the beginning of both. So because you know when you chant, it makes you more open to getting the knowledge from the books, because the chanting makes your heart more like open to hearing what Krishna is telling you. And when you hear what Krishna is telling you, then naturally you'll want to chant and serve Krishna. So they work together. But in the beginning, do a bit of both. And wherever you're, if your natural interest is more in reading, then you can, when you have extra time, you can do more reading. And then as time goes by, then naturally you both will increase. So just do it, do something of both, and then try to increase them like together.
Can I just add to that question, please?
Yeah.
So that's reading and chanting, but what about like deity service, cooking for the deities, those sort of services that you do at home as well? And what is the right balance to have between all of them, especially if you're working, for example, or go to university or school, where you have a long travel time to and back, then what would be the right balance? Because cooking itself is an hour or two, depending on what you're meant to do.
Yeah, for sure. Everyone's life is different and everyone has different pressures. So everyone has to work that out to some extent individually. But what we can say is that chanting, reading, doing some service, these are like essential ingredients. So there should be something of each of these, at least something. You may do a little more. You see, generally, yeah, like chanting and reading cannot be compromised. That has to be a daily thing, right? And then service, you know, maybe according to your capacity, once, twice, three times a week. But what you'll find is that, shall I tell you an amazing thing about time? How many of you feel like you don't have enough time in life? Yeah, feel like there's just so many things I want to do, I don't have time. I'll give you an amazing thing. If you don't waste time, that's a hard thing to do. But if you don't waste time, you know two things happen. The first thing is that Krishna empowers you to do more in the time that you have than you would normally be able to do. Do you have that experience sometimes? Something should normally take you like 3 hours, but you can just get it done in an hour, right? So, but when you don't waste time, Krishna empowers you to actually get more done in the time that you do have. And the second thing is, when you don't waste time, Krishna actually begins to open up more time for you. So like, for example, like it would take you like 2 hours to cook or something, and someone just comes and says like, yeah, don't worry, I'll cook today. It's like, okay, got 2 hours for you. Amazing. Krishna starts doing things like that. But the deal is, you're not allowed to waste any time. So we, like often we say like, oh, I've got too many things to do, I don't have enough time, and how do I fit it all in? But our problem in life is that we waste a lot of time. Would you agree? What are the main ways in which we waste time?
Social media.
Media, phone, what else?
Netflix.
Staring at the wall.
Say again?
Staring at the wall.
Staring at the wall. Run your own. Sleeping.
Yeah, well, you know, we're worrying or sleeping or oversleeping. Yeah, so we waste a lot of time if you think about it. So if we focus on trying not to waste time, it's amazing. You know how many hours Einstein used to sleep every day?
Two.
Yeah, he used to sleep 2 hours a day. Prabhupada Yomi used to sleep 2-3 hours a day. I'm not suggesting it. But you know, like, when you're really inspired about life, you don't actually need to sleep that much. You know the best alarm clock in the world?
The sun?
Trust me, people sleep through the sun.
The soul?
Good.
Super soul.
Your mind? Well, you got a good mind. My mind's telling me to sleep. Go on, have another guess. What's the best alarm clock in the world? Shri Dhammapur used to say this to me. Shri Dhammapur was a wonderful devotee at Anana. Unfortunately, is no longer with us, but he used to tell me this. It begins with P.
For sure.
P. Okay, give me a second. That's U. P U.
Punch.
P U R.
Purity.
That's a good one, not that one. P U R P.
Purpose.
Purple.
Purpose.
He used to say the best alarm clock in the world is purpose. Like when your eyes open in the morning and you have a purpose, you have a reason to live, you have something in life that you're inspired by, it's like you're going to jump out of bed because you're like, I haven't wasted any time. You know, there's so much to do. Right? So the best alarm clock in the world, along with prasadam, is purpose. So when we have more and more inspiration, we'll waste less and less time, and then we'll be able to do more and more. Makes sense. You can also shift. You can.
What's this? So what? So one question here that I thought was quite appropriate is, how do you prioritize sadhana over social media?
Well,
so of course,
how do you prioritize sadhana over social media?
So of course that's going along the lines of, in one sense, social media, the pleasure or the rasa, the experience is direct. But if I'm doing sadhana and it's boring. It seems boring. Whereas social media.
Boring. What do you mean it's boring? Yeah. You don't get that instant buzz in the same way, right? Yeah.
And especially in this dopamine, you all know about dopamine, right? So the phone's constantly giving us dopamine, and sadhana is so little dopamine compared to what I'm used to when I'm getting hit after hit after hit on social media. And then I'm turning to chanting, there's practically zero dopamine effects. Of course, how many of us keep, even while we're doing our sadhana, how many of us keep checking our phone and just hoping to get one more dopamine hit before I chant the next mantra? So I do ask.
You know, like, I guess, I don't want to keep telling you, like, okay, just keep trying, keep doing it, it'll come. But that is an important message, you know. It's like, you know, the best things in life aren't the things that give you instant happiness. The best things in life come from often those things that you have to work hard for, that are difficult, that take patience, but they come out into something amazing. You, like, all of you are disciplined. Yeah, many of you studied, right? And it's not like you felt inspired throughout the whole thing, but you knew it's going to lead to a better life, so you had that patience. So it's like that a little bit with sadhana. And you just have to be patient, but then what you get at the end is like hundreds and hundreds of times better than that dopamine. The other thing is that in Krishna consciousness, you do get a lot of like buzzing stuff as well, like being in kirtan, isn't it? That's buzzing. Doing something for Krishna, you know. It can be many things that give you like a buzz in Krishna consciousness. And if you want to experience that buzz of those activities in Krishna consciousness, if you have good sadhana, then what happens is when you go into a kirtan, you'll actually be able to experience more. If you think the buzz that you've got from kirtan is like, wow, that was amazing. If you now have strong sadhana underneath that, and then you go into a kirtan, you can take it even to another level. Like many of you have heard Aindra Prabhu's kirtans, isn't it? Like all of you have heard Arya's kirtans amazing. You feel amazing when you hear his kirtans. You know Aindra Prabhu, how many hours he was also just chanting on his own beads in private, away from the kirtan group and just connecting with Krishna. And all of that meant that when he came and he chanted with everyone, it just went to another level. So your sadhana also will help you to get a buzz in all the other activities of Krishna consciousness, because your sadhana helps you to develop purity. And that purity is what brings Krishna in front of you. When Krishna sees someone with a pure heart, Krishna's like, wow, I want to be there, right there with that person. So, yeah.
So going off of social media and sadhana, sometimes, like, I don't know if it's just me, but I find myself thinking, okay, I'm doing my sadhana attentively, like I'm chanting or I'm reading, I'm focused, there's nothing like that's distracting, I'm not overthinking. Then other times I feel like, oh, I'm really distracted, whether it's my phone or it's just my thoughts in my head. So my question is kind of, if even if you were doing it inattentively, is it still like it's still progress? Is it not, like, because you're on that journey?
Because you're on that journey, what? Yeah, like, so you're saying, like, when you're doing sadhana, the mind is wandering everywhere, and is it still beneficial even if your mind's wandering? Yeah. It's interesting, like, Krishna says to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, yato yato nishchalati manaschanchalamastiyam. Krishna looks at Arjuna and he's not like, Arjuna, maybe your mind may wander, and then Krishna's like, your mind will wander. And when your mind wanders, Arjun, what should you do? What would you do when your mind wanders? Say you're chanting japa and your mind is going everywhere. What would you do?
You'd have to pull it back.
Amazing. That's exactly what Krishna says. Tatastato niyam yetad atman eva vasanmayet. Which is the Sanskrit version of what you just said. Krishna says, when your mind wanders, just bring it back under the control of the self. Like I tell you, like I just, last night, I flew in from Germany. That's why I wasn't there this morning. So, I had to make that confession here. I got here after midnight. But, you know, like, okay, so we flew from Munich to London. Yeah. I learned this because at one point I wanted to be a pilot for about 3 weeks. But I learned this, right? You know, like when a plane flies, say a plane is flying from Munich to London, yeah? Then when the pilot takes off, do you know there's something called a flight path? Yeah. So that's like a straight line. That's the line you take. And that's the line that the plane is supposed to take to get to London. Shall I tell you an amazing thing? When a plane flies from one destination to another, say Munich to London, how much of the journey do you think the plane is actually on the flight path? 20% of the journey is actually on that line. For most of the journey, it's either this side or this side of the line. But why does the plane still reach its destination at the end of 2 hours?
Because
that's its focus. Yeah, and because what's happening is as the pilot is always trying to get back to the flight path. It's not that he's on the flight path all the time. But like he's going to the right and then he's like, okay, go get back. And then he goes on to the left and he's like, no, we've got to go right again. We've got to get back. So for most of the journey, he's not even on the flight path. But because there is a flight path and he's trying to get back to it, you still ultimately get to the destination. So that's what Krishna says to Arjuna. You'll never be like a perfect devotee every single day, like Hare Krishna, like with full. But as long as you're always trying to bring your mind back. So yeah, even if you're inattentively chanting, but inattentively chanting and also trying. It can't be like, alright, my mind's gone. It is what it is. Krishna does say when your mind wanders, you know, so no, but then you have to try and bring it back. So as long as you keep trying to bring it back, then you're making progress. So the disqualification is not that your mind wanders. The disqualification is that when your mind wanders, if you just let it wander, then you may not make so much progress. You have to try to bring it back. Yeah.
That's such an amazing point. Thank you.
Yeah.
Really powerful.
Yeah, I think just like what you're saying as well, it's like if we just see it as a relationship you have in this world with someone, like if you want to make a relationship with someone, whether it's a friend or family member, you have to make an effort with that relationship, right? You've got to show them that, look, I'm making an effort. I might not always be right, or you might sometimes see that, oh, I've slipped up here or made a mistake here, but you see that my intention is good. I'm always trying to stay focused on this relationship, for example.
Exactly.
That way, you know, like for example, Krishna would say, we'll see and say, actually, you know, your mind was wandering a lot of the time, but you're always pulling it back, you're always making that endeavor, I can see that you love me. So, yeah.
I was, you know, they have weddings at the manor, and once I was driving past one of the wedding tents, and the priest was speaking, and then right as I was driving past, it was loud, so I could hear it. And he goes, in Vedic culture, you don't marry the one you love. And I was like, what? You don't marry the one you love? Who do you marry the one you hate? So then I stopped the car and I was waiting. I was like, okay, he's got to justify this statement or I'm going to report him. And then he made a deep statement. He goes, in Vedic culture, you don't marry the one you love. You learn to love the one you marry. And I was like, whoa, that's deep. I was thinking like, wow, that's interesting. Because we think like love is an emotion, like, okay, when I chant, I don't feel love for Krishna, therefore I have no love for Krishna. But love is not just like feeling connected all the time. Love is like commitment to each other, like serving each other, like trying to do the best for each other. And when you do that, then the love comes. Right, so it's like that. The mind may not right now automatically flow towards Krishna, and we think like, oh, I don't love Krishna. But by trying to bring the mind back to Krishna, the love comes. So yeah, I hope that helps.
Maybe one last question.
Yeah, I don't know how we're doing for time.
We'll just do one last question.
Give everyone a break as well. Like, yeah.
One last question. So, somebody may be in a situation where, for whatever reason, whether it's work, whether it's exams, and they're just totally absorbed in revision, they may stop their sadhana temporarily, but then it makes it very difficult to get. So, how do you have any advice or tips that if, for whatever reason, they get out of their normal sadhana, how do we get back on track?
You will, you know, there will be times in life where you know, your determination or your enthusiasm or even your capacity to do stuff goes, and then even if you do that, you should never feel guilty. You should never feel like, oh man, I messed up. And it's okay, just pick it up again and just try again. Yeah, it's like I said, you're not going to be on the flight path all the time, you know. But then you just try to get back there, right? But here, I'll tell you another amazing thing on this. if you chant and you try to do it nicely, you know what? Like, you'll become so much better in everything else you do in life. It's like, when it comes to study, you'll just be like, your mind will be like sharp. You know, when it comes to relationships, you'll be able to deal with people better. When it comes to like problems in life, it won't like affect you in the same way. So sometimes people think like, oh, I don't have time to chant because I've got so many other things to do. But you know what? If you invest that time to chant, then it will make you so much more effective in all those other things you do. Does that make sense? It's like this guy, I just end on this story, this guy like got a new job as a woodcutter. So he was cutting trees every day. And so the first day he was like super enthusiastic, he wanted to impress the boss, so he cut 20 trees. And the next day he thought, I'm going to impress him even more, so he started working even harder. But the next day he only cut 18 trees. So he was like, well, I'm working harder. Like, what's going on? Then the third day he came and was like, no, I've got to turn it around, you know? So he started working even harder. And he cut 16 trees. And one person came by and he saw him sweating. And he saw this guy, he was just like bewildered because he was working harder but he was doing less. He goes, what's the problem? He goes, I don't know what's going wrong, you know, every day I'm working harder. I'm putting more energy in, but I'm cutting less trees. And then the guy walking past goes, but did you take some time to sharpen your saw? And he goes, what are you talking about? I don't have time, I've got to cut trees. I can't spend time sharpening the saw. You know, it's going to take away from the time I've got to cut trees. And then the guy told him, you can work as hard as you want, but if you don't sharpen your saw, you can work harder and harder and harder and you'll get less and less done. So if you just spend a little bit of time sharpening your saw, you know what? For the same energy that you're using, you'll be able to do much more. So that's what sadhana is like. It's like sharpening your saw. And you'll actually become better at your studies, you'll become better at everything else in life.
That's an amazing way to end. If you sharpen your saw, you can do much more.
Money back guarantee.
says the monk.
Thank you so much, everyone. Nice to be here with you. And I hope to catch up more.
Alright, well, thank you to Prabhu and Prabhu for facilitating our first session.